arterial atlas and our subarea circulation plan. Again, from there, plan, the projects are in that comprehensive plan, and we develop our 20-year capital facilities plan from it. Within our organization, we rank the projects from that capital facility plan, and they enter into our 6-year transportation improvement program. One document that's required by law to be adopted by our Clark County Council, as well as our annual construction program, which is the first year of that 6-year transportation improvement program. Later on, as the projects develop, we establish capital road project numbers, which is required by law, County Road Administration Board, and that's how we manage and then define our projects legally. Next slide, please. Jackie, these maps might not show up well. I'm ready to share my screen with some better maps if that helps. But this is a map of our capital facility plan. Everybody, I think.
Carl, would you like me to, Chris, would you like me to do that? Do you want to take presentation?
Yeah, right after this slide, Jackie, I just wanted to show the capital facility plan. I'm going to show a transportation improvement program map and then an overlay of them both. But they get a little small on a PDF. But this is the map of our capital facility plan. They have both segment and intersection projects, as well as not mapped here, our ongoing program or managed sidewalk, bridges, rural road, road improvement, that type of projects. And I'm ready to share, Jackie. And you. So this is a map of our draft 2023-2028 transportation improvement program, both of our main capital projects in red and blue, as well as our green ongoing program projects. Anything from sidewalks, Highway 99, 68th Street to bridges, all the dots, direct projects either from the capital facility plan directly or the ongoing programs within that capital facility plan. This is then an overlay of those projects as they enter into our program from that capital facility plan. So you could see where there are overlays is where the projects are actively into our program. The ones that aren't are going to be future projects that are ranked and brought in as other projects are finished. And Jackie, you could set it back to the presentation if you can, please.
Okay, 1 second.
Sure. You can leave it here for a second, Jack. I just want to hear about this. A lot of people ask why if projects are coming in certain areas, but within Public Works, we don't have the ability to bring in projects outside of direct council requests or emergency situations unless they come through the capital facility plan. So Gary will talk about the update to that capital facility plan. I don't think any new projects have been added. Currently, we're at the 2015-2035 20-year capital facilities plan. So we're due for an update. I'm not sure when that is. Gary could touch on that later. Jackie, if you could slowly pass through a few more slides, you're going to see the maps that I just presented in the PDF format. first of two, this one and the next one, not bad as far as the last one here I wanted to avoid. It seemed to be a little bit blurry, which is why I slid over to the better quality. And one more there, Jackie, please. Is there any way you can make that bigger? This is our proposed construction schedule for 2023 to 2028 and beyond. The gray projects are projects that are currently in construction, nearing construction, and should be finished by 2022, possibly with slight punch list items into 2023. Some of our bigger projects on the future are 179th Street corridor projects, Delfell Road, 15th Avenue, a couple of segment projects on 179th from 15th Avenue to 26th Avenue, 29th Avenue to 50th, as well as intersections at 29th and 50th Avenue. Bunch of sidewalk projects, 68th Street Sidewalk, Northeast Hazel Dell Avenue. Some Highway 99 projects, 102nd to 104th and 110th to 117th, or as a future project. Some rural projects, 182nd Avenue and Risto Road, Southeast Blair Road, and Mason Creek. There's a lot of bridges as well in rural areas, but it's here for you if you wanted to look and see different projects. At the bottom, we just summarize our programs. A lot of projects come in through our ongoing managed programs, that aren't detailed in this construction schedule. And next slide, Jackie, please. So this is where we are as far as schedules and steps. We had a council work session earlier this week, yesterday actually, preparing the TIP documents throughout the year, but in September, a little out of order, we sent them through for this process. We're going to be at the October 20th, I believe the public planning commission hearing. And also on November 3rd, we're going to share this with DEEB, Development Engineering Advisory Board, all culminating to our TIP adoption through County Council on November 15th. The Transportation Improvement Program, as well as our annual construction program, which is the first year of our TIP, has to be adopted by Council before our budget is adopted in December. Next slide, Jackie. So the request today is to seek Planning Commission support of our 2023-2028 Transportation Improvement Program for consistency with the 20-year capital facilities plan. And then again, we're coming to the Planning Commission hearing on October 20th. Any questions or comments?
Does anybody have any questions?
Just clarity, and Chris, you may have hit on this. What's the difference between obligated road improvement projects and program improvement projects? What's the difference between obligated and programmed?
Good question. When a project is spent 30% of its budget or has a grant commitment, they become obligated projects. Before that, anything that's programmed into our what we call program, we program dollars and commit to them, that they're programmed.
Thank you.
But the other aspect of that is our ongoing programs. We don't count those either way. They're just, they just exist through, they're in essence programmed, or could be, obligated as well. But we only designate that for the larger capital projects based on 30% or grant commitments.
Holden, do you have any questions?
Other side of that is, has to do
I with just support. Have a quick one.
Go ahead.
So, Chris, ahead. Chris, this is Eldon. So, on that schedule that you had, that goes out for like 2 or 3 years, what are the constraints that you guys have in putting together that schedule?
Are you talking about the construction schedule?
Are you talking about the construction schedule?
Yes.
Okay, Jackie, can you please back up?
Okay, Jackie, can you please back up?
Yes. Hold on. Sorry.
We have had a change to our environmental permitting. Are you talking this schedule or the construction schedule?
Oh, no,
go down.
Go up, 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 up.
There you go.
That one right there.
There you go. Yeah, so this is...
What are the constraints that you have?
In terms of, I'm sorry, constraints? This is when we're planning the construction to occur.
Okay, but how do you decide, like I see there's like four or five of them that are going on at any one time? Is that
correct.
What the constraint is, or can you do like 10 of them at once, or?
Well, this is really isn't all of our projects. This is just our larger projects. A lot of our smaller ongoing programs and some, most of our road preservation ADA work, for example, hot mix asphalts and bridge and guardrail projects are not on here. So this is really our larger capital projects and our larger ongoing program projects. But, you know, depending on how long they take to design, this is when they would fall in as far as construction.
And Eldon, I might be able to, excuse me, expand on that for you a bit if I understand the question. We tend to look at this, we line these schedules up together, but we also, you know, we are constrained by limited resources, but we forecast our 6-year program out against the funding that we believe is going to come in from the different elements, the grants that are available, and then as well as the available road fund, and try to program that out. That's what Chris, you know, works most of his midnight oil on, to make sure that we haven't overextended what we're able to do in any given year as we move through that construction schedule. That's probably a major constraint and how we program things, if that's what you're asking.
Yes.
And the yellow projects are ones that have grant commitments and funding. The white ones are further out. So the white ones have the potential to be pushed, depending on what Ken just mentioned, grant funding opportunities and our own county resources. But the schedule as it sits here has some shifts to go based on some shifts in environmental documentation that's going to take a little bit longer. So we have to sort that out and see how long that's going to take. Hopefully we could keep to this schedule.
And Chris, this is Brian. So just one quick question again. I just want to be clear. So none of these projects are new projects. These are projects we looked at last year and approved, right?
Correct. There's one that's, I mean, smaller projects that aren't on here that come in through our ongoing program would be new. We're looking at a grant, for example, through a Safe Routes to School for Truman Elementary. But yeah, as far as these larger capital projects, they are the same projects that were on last year.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I just have a quick question. This is Matt. Is there any, I can see that we have 5 projects getting ready to be finished up this year. Just out of curiosity, is there any list of projects that we've approved and then we've completed and that we could show the public and go, here's what we did in 2021, 2022, kind of an idea of, Is that something that you guys keep track of, or is that something that
we'd be able to present? Yeah, last year, Matt, we had some other projects that we were talking about in 2021 that finished Southeast Blair Road, for example. So, I mean, I could provide a list of recently completed projects to follow up if that's something you're interested in. But again, these are our larger projects that we have a bunch of other smaller ones that probably would fit that criteria.
I just thought it might be a good idea just to present that to the public, to say, hey, here's what we've done with your tax dollars. Here's what we're completing currently, and here's what we're going to do in the future. You guys are doing, I mean, this is a fantastic presentation, and the way that you guys laid out is, I mean, you totally can understand what's going on and what you're doing. And I just thought it'd be great to you know, really highlight what you guys have been able to accomplish, because you get a lot done every single year.
Sure. Yeah, Sonia, I'm not sure when slide into the presentation I sent you to document some finished projects. Sure. Thank you for that idea.
And I would really caveat it with, if time allows and you have the time to do it. If everybody's busy, and you know, I understand. I just thought it would be a nice thing to present if we could. Okay.
Sure. Yeah, great idea. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great idea. Thank you. Yeah, and Matt.
And Chris, this is Jackie.
Jackie.
I just wanted to let Chris know that he's more than welcome to amend his presentation for the hearing.
Thank you.
I just wanted to
leave that one on there for now, and then when it's updated, we could slide that in.
Yeah. Just really quickly, Matt, I really appreciate that comment. I think we certainly have felt the strain of not having enough staff and resource to do some of the things that would really toot our own horn. But you're absolutely right. There's a great body of work that we have completed. It's on my list for sure to make sure that we display that better, get it out before the public so that they could just see some of the completed projects as a whole. I really appreciate the comment. So thank you.
Okay, are we ready to go to the TIF at this time? All right, Gary?
Thank you.
Good evening, Vice Chair and Planning Commission members. I'm here to discuss a comprehensive plan document, CPZ 2022-0007, amending the traffic impact fees. I'm here this evening with Ken Later. The next slide, please. We are proposing to amend the adopted traffic impact fee rate and amend the adopted Clark County Capital Facility Plan. I'll call that the CFP, with the revised impact fees. Next slide, please. The 2015-2035 Comprehensive Growth Management Plan has a 20-year list of needed transportation improvements to accommodate future population and reduce congestion. The last TIF update occurred in 2020. Clark County Code requires an annual adjustment to account for inflation. In 2016, Clark County Council adopted the Traffic Impact Fee Technical Program document that provides the methodology to amend the TIF rates. Next slide, please. The inflation fee methodology rates per vehicle trips using the nationally recognized engineering news record, it's called ENR, Construction Index. The ENR has an index for Seattle. Staff uses January for year-to-year reviews. The index is based off 200 hours of common labor rates, price of steel and lumber. The annual adjustment formula is the construction cost index, which is the CCI, is the January CCI multiplied by the base year CCI, which is 2020 for us, multiplied by the district fee. And in this example, the district fee is $551. Next slide, please. We have 4 TIF districts. 3 are inside Vancouver's urban growth boundary. Orchards is in purple color. Hazeldale is in green. Mount Vista is light blue. The rural area in yellow is the 4th TIF district. Next slide, please. This table shows the adopted 2020 TIF rates and the proposed 2022 TIF rates based on the 13.2% inflation increase from 2020. Next slide, please. This slide and the next slide show the adopted 2020 CFP project transportation costs and the proposed 13.2% inflation increase in the 2022 project costs. So there are intersection projects in here and road segment projects on both these tables. Next slide, please. This slide shows the total project cost of the identified capital projects needed to accommodate projected population growth and congestion increased 13.2% from approximately $355 million to roughly $403 million. Next slide, please. So Clark County Code 40.560010 plan amendment procedures includes two criterion for amending the CFP. Criterion one is to review and update the CFP at a minimum of every 4 years. The last update was in 2019, adopted in 2020. The Washington Administrative Code, we call it the WAC, 365-196-850 authorizes Clark County to impose impact fees on new development activities. Clark County Code indicates rates shall be adjusted annually. Criterion one is met. Next slide, please. The next criteria is to determine during the CFP update that policies are consistent with GMA, WAC, and comprehensive plan policies. The proposed action is consistent with GMA goal number 3, goal number 12, RCW 36.70A.0706 and WAC 365-196-415. The Growth Management Act requires the 6-year transportation improvement plan, that's the TIP that Chris just talked about, to be financially constrained and balanced. The 2016 Carpenter Growth Management Plan projects a capital shortfall of $158.1 million. The plan identifies updating impact fees as a strategy to increase revenue. Revising the TIF rate helps to reduce the projected plan shortfall. TIFs are the traffic impact component of a development fee. An impact fee is a fee levied on a developer by the county as partial compensation for expected effects of the new development. An increase in TIF revenues will allow the identified capital plan, facilities plan projects to maintain established level of service standards consistent with the land use plan. Amending the traffic impact fee rates and the proposed CFP project cost amendments is consistent with policies in the 2016 comp plan. Next slide, please. The proposed action is consistent with RCWs relating to impact fees. GMA authorizes counties to impose transportation impact fees on public roads that are identified in capital facility plan, capital facility elements of a comprehensive plan. Clark County Code 40.630.010 impact fee revision indicates that impact fees shall be adjusted periodically to adjust for inflation. Adjusting the traffic impact fee rate for inflation supports balancing the CFP. Criterion two is met. Next slide, please. The traffic impact fees collected in the four adopted TIF districts pay for growth-related capital projects. Clark County Council approved the 2020 Transportation Capital Facility Plan on February 18, 2020, revising the traffic impact fees to pay for capital projects listed in the 2020 Transportation Capital Facility Plan and adjusting for inflation provides an additional approximately $47 million to pay for new capital projects listed in the 2020 Transportation Capital Facilities Plan. The proposed amendment to the CFP and TIF rates is necessary to serve urban development while maintaining level of service standards. Staff finds that the proposed TIF amendments have met the CFP amendment criteria. Next slide, please. This is a public process. We have a PC hearing scheduled on October 20th, a county council hearing on November 15th, and the proposed adopting ordinance would occur with the budget hearing ordinance in early December. I did go to the Development Engineering Advisory Board earlier this afternoon and let them know that we're updating the TIF rates and the capital facility plan. And they didn't have any comments or concerns with what I was doing. And I did receive a public comment on the DNS from Squaxin Island Indian Tribe. It was just a letter saying that they acknowledged the SEPA and any projects that come through, they'd like to be notified of them individually. So I just sent that out today, so that'll be there for you on the website later on. And next slide. And thank you for your time. I'm open to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions? Eldon?
So you said on the report that the TIFs are supposed to be updated every year, but you went back to 2020. Were they not updated last year?
No, they were not. Staff shortages and COVID the update didn't occur.
Okay. And then if I understand right, when you applied that inflation factor, you had a chart that said 2020 cost and then 2022 cost, and it applied the inflation?
Yes.
Do I mean to say that, so the budget for that project now just got increased by 13.2%? Or is that what that chart was showing? Yeah. I guess I don't understand.
Jackie, can you go to the next page? There we go. So it's the total project costs.
And then total project costs in 2022.
Yes, so the estimate in 2020, like for that the TSO projects, was $4,996,000. Is that 986? Sorry, my eyes. And then applying that the 13.2% adjusted inflation rate bumps it up to $5,644,242.
So that last column then is all the. That's the projected cost.
Yes.
Budget cost.
Yes.
For those projects coming up. Okay. All right. But the previous report though said that they already had funding for everything, for stuff that was coming up in the next year or two. Did that take into consideration the inflation factor?
Can you show me what you're talking about?
Well, the previous, when we looked at the transportation improvement project, it said the next two or three years they were all funded.
Correct. So they are funded. So the transportation improvement program, some of the projects, some of the capital projects on there are funded with traffic impact fees.
All right.
And so the construction costs go up yearly. So we'll be able to collect more traffic impact fees for those okay. projects, so they can get built and continue to be funded.
All right.
Quick, a couple of questions, Gary. This is Brian. I just want to piggyback on Commissioner Elton. There are instances where the cost of materials and supplies are outpacing normal inflation. So what happens in terms of those construction costs?
They go up. Just the costs go up. The cost to build a project goes up. It happens. I mean, we'll put a project in to the TIF at the beginning of it, and then if it doesn't get built right away in that 6-year time frame and the costs keep going up, then we have to find additional funding to meet those or scale the project back. And that's usually a last resort. We just try to seek more funding through grants and whatever else is available.
Okay.
Sorry, if I could add to that for you, sorry, the disembodied voice coming from a screen somewhere. If I could add to that, we've definitely seen certain material costs that have gone up beyond, you know, what this indice would indicate, you know, some of the prices. And so we're constantly updating our engineering estimates through the design process, and at the milestones we would report those out, and then reevaluate again based on our total budget and our project level budgets what we can program and move through, you know, on the immediate construction schedule or the upcoming years. So it's just a kind of a constant view of what can and can't be done, with the recognition that we're in some pretty volatile conditions right now, especially when it comes to things that are tied to petroleum and not to mention, you know, labor shortages and supply chain issues as well. So it's something that we evaluate regularly to make sure we don't overextend and certainly don't over encumber what we've programmed. So.
Thank you both, Ken and Gary. Another question, and it's just a clarification. I want to go back to the formula. And Gary, you said it was the CC&I, the January CC&I times the base year, and then, but down below, it looks like it's the January CC&I divided by the base year.
On the adjustment formula line.
The adjustment formula line
shows the multiplication.
Yeah, it looks like there's an error. And
it would be up above on where it says
January times the base year. Yeah, so it looks like I need to.
It should be January divided by the base year. Times the district fee, and we can verify that for you, but that that looks like the error. I noticed that too as we were going through. So
that's a good thing I have an engineer who understands math here with me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ken.
No problem.
Okay, I have a quick question. If we could scroll down to, let's see, keep going. Well, where was it? Scroll down, keep going. Go down to the next, so that's 20. Okay, so I just wanted to clarify. So the what we're looking at here is all the projects that were listed on the graph or on the chart there, right?
Yes.
That's what we're seeing at 402 million.
Yes, that's the 13.2% increase.
And that doesn't include the 2022 projects, correct? Or does that include the 2022 projects?
These are all the 2020 projects. We didn't add any projects, take away any projects. We just took the 2020 projects and pulled them out 13.2% into 2022.
Oh, got it. Okay. I'm picking up what you're putting down there. I didn't catch that part. Okay. And so if I'm understanding correctly, that calculation that comes up with, I think it was $515 for the traffic impact fee. That's so the reason why we do this, and I correct me if I'm wrong, I want to make sure I understand this, is that when we increase the cost of the projects, we recalculate the TIF fee. So when we have new projects come online, that TIF fee now is charged per trip.
Correct.
When we calculate it. So we can collect more traffic impact fees to pay for those projects.
Yes.
If we said there was no inflation and we kept the projects cheap, then we would not be collecting enough TIF fees to fund them.
Yes. Yep. Okay. You got it. That's perfect.
Wanted to make sure I understood that. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And to add one note to that, I don't know where the echo comes from when I speak of it. The corollary to that is if there's a credit, if we have a developer who builds some of that frontage before we come in with our project, then they would recognize a larger credit for that work that they've done against, you know, their TIF credit, with the same increased rate. So it's, you know, for the developer, it's kind of as a wash if you look at it that way, in terms of the rate change, but.
Thanks. Okay, nobody else has any questions? Then we will move on to the biannual code amendments. April and Ted, take it away.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is April Firth. I'm the director of community development. Like Ken, I'm fairly new to my role and very new to the biannual code amendment process. So I also, like Ken, am going to allow my very capable staff to present our biannual code updates for 2022. So Ted is our land use manager, and Jennifer Reynolds will be presenting the development engineering portion. She is the manager of development engineering. So I will let them take it from here. And of course, I will be available for questions.
Thank you, April. Good evening, commissioners. As April said, my name is Ted Venegas. I'm the land use review manager with community development, and I'll be presenting the proposed biennial amendments. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the process staff has completed and will complete for this year's biennial code amendments. We began with staff meetings to determine what code sections should be included this year. The list was then further reviewed by the community planning team and the attorney's office. As you can see, we then met with the council in a work session format to get guidance to proceed with the proposed amendments. As well, we met with the Development Engineering Advisory Board for a recommendation. And that brings us then to tonight's meeting with the Planning Commission in your work session format. After tonight, we will meet with you again in a public hearing format on the 20th, and then complete the process with the council on November 1st. It should be noted that the intent of the biennial process is to correct, you know, Scrivener's errors and address minor policy changes. And I don't believe the biennial process has been done since about 2019. So when COVID hit, the process was halted. So this will be our first startup of that since 2019. Next slide, please. I believe the commissioners have a list of the proposed amendments in front of them. With the following slides, we will go through and briefly explain each amendment. As we proceed through each of the amendments, as April indicated, Jennifer Reynolds will address those specific to the development engineering side of things, and I will address those specific to the land use side of things. So on this one that you see before you, this is an example of a Scrivener's error. This section of code references, cross-references the an incorrect section from another section of code. So this is just a correction to correct an error in the code. Next slide, please. On this one, this is again to correct an error in the code. So a setback in a table is not consistent with the referenced, is inconsistent with the referenced note. So this again is just correcting essentially a Scrivener's error. Next slide, please. And this one will be Jennifer's.
Yes. So this one just deals with removing redundant language from the code. It talks about paveback, and this is already covered in this section, so that's why we're going to remove it from the section indicated. Let me see there. Right, okay. Sorry, I'm trying to find. Okay, yeah, this talks about paveback in section B5, which is frontage improvements, and so we're just removing it from B5, and since B7 essentially already covers it, that's the gist of this one.
Okay. This amendment will clarify that the required recreation space and required landscaping for higher density multifamily projects can essentially cross over. Historically, planners have, for the most part, allowed these two code sections to cross over. So this amendment would allow the outdoor recreation space that is required for these specific projects to count toward the landscaping requirements associated with these projects as well, outside of the required buffering for these projects.
And just to clarify further, rec space would not be, landscape would not be allowed to satisfy the rec space requirement, only the other way around.
Correct. Next slide, please. And I believe the next few are for Jennifer.
Yeah, so this next one, we currently have a definition for alleys, and it's just a general definition where we want to create two definitions, one for a public alley, one for a private alley, now that we've added some code sections in the past that now allows private alleys, I think, for instance, the narrow lot standards. So it really just clarifies that a public alley it provides like a secondary means of access, and that you can't use it for your only vehicle access or your primary access to the lot, where a private alley could be. Next slide. So this one kind of goes back to the first one I discussed about driveway paved back. There's just a little mix up where this is located in the code. Like I said, B7 talks about driveway paved back and just the requirements for intersection design, but it should be placed more in B4, which talks about access management, because this kind of regulates all the driveway approaches onto the public road. So the payback requirement really should be added to this, or at least referenced in the B4 section when it applies to building permits and approach permits. Next slide, please. This one is just a clarification in adding the word existing to the driveway spacing standards on just local access roads. Without the word existing, one could, you know, create a or subdivide land and create a flag lot and then thus claim that they, if they don't meet spacing, that they would be exempt. Next slide, please. This adds the just language to the current code about requiring turnouts and turnarounds on driveways longer than 300 feet. We're going to add the words modified and extended driveways. Right now it says all new driveways, but also when permits come in for our building permits come in for extensions of driveways, those should be held to the same kind of standard as new driveways. As you know, it's a fire life safety issue. So it's really just adding the words modified and extended to encapsulate all driveways. Next slide, please. This one is just a clarification to our road modification procedures. It's really just reclassifying examples of road mods. We have about three different types. You have your minor, your technical, which is the middle one, and then your major. And those kind of fit in different categories depending on, you know, the engineering analysis needed. So we were going to take anything that had to deal with a revision to a public road cross section or pavement design. For local access roads, those were considered minor, but really it takes a lot of staff time to kind of review those, so it's more appropriate to be technical. We did kind of discuss this one with Deeb this afternoon, and of the code changes, at least the engineering code changes, this one they were really a little bit apprehensive about changing. Just because they said they already have this whole road modification code on their work session to kind of reevaluate the examples. But this one really, from staff standpoint, is just a reclassification as it comes to the fees that we are applying to the classifications. Because right now, a technical road mod is obviously more review fee than a minor road mod, which has a less fee. So we just want staff's time to be compensated for during the development review process. And next slide, please. This one is just clarifying the reference in when applying TIF. I think right now the code points to a document that really has an abbreviated list of land uses, and we're just clarifying the document that the ITE manual should be used, because obviously it has more trip generation land use. Land uses. So really, it's there's not much of a change with this one. It's just clarifying what references should be used to determine the land uses and the TIF fees associated with those. And next slide, I think the next one is Ted's, yes.
Right, so this section clarifies that a wall is still required for such projects. And that references to F2 standards, which largely deal with fences, are only in relation to site obscuring standards. And that a fence is not a substitute for a wall. So this, there has been some confusion with projects because of this code references the F2 standards. So we just wanted to clarify that though it references those F2 standards, that is only for the site obscuring element of that, and that a wall is still required and cannot be substituted with a standard fence. Next, please. Back to Jennifer.
So this code section deals with site distance easements and parked cars within the site distance easements, and then ways to mitigate for those as it relates to corner lots and the driveways. The code language that we have now changed a couple years ago and took into account narrow lots, and then added kind of some stipulations about site distance, and then also traffic control measures to maybe ensure site distance. And I think after trying to apply this code to developments that came in after the code change, it was very hard because the addition of site distance and mitigation measures into this kind of code reference was just inappropriate, and it makes it very, very hard to implement when it's just not something that needs to be in this code section. And it kind of, reverts back to the language that was in the original code before this was changed, trying to accommodate for the narrow lots and maybe what those having narrower lots, what the impact with having more driveways on the road would be, especially at the corner intersections. And next slide.
So this section deals with the lot area calculation section of the code and corrects an oversight. This adds in the RC1 and RC2.5 zones into this section, which were left out, and it was determined it was an oversight that those two zones were left out. So this correction provides consistency in the code by including all rural zones to this section when it comes to lot area calculation. Next slide, please. And that's what we have for tonight. And again, the next steps, October 20th, we will be coming back to the commission for an actual public hearing. And then November 1st will be a council public hearing for a final determination on these amendments. And we can stand for any questions you might have at this time.
Ted, at this time, this is Steve Archer, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney. Commissioner. I'd like to, if I might, I thought I should make one comment with regards to something that was presented. This regards the recreation space amendment for multifamily developments. And I don't know, perhaps it might be helpful if we could scroll back to that just for reference.
I think it was slide 6.
Thank you. I just thought it would be helpful for the commission to have this background. This amendment would also be the subject of 2 interim ordinances that the council passed in this July. And one of those interim ordinances has now expired, and the other one with identical language to this is the subject of a referendum petition proposal. Again, this language wasn't adopted as an interim ordinance. That has been suspended while the referendum petition proposal process plays out. And if this was passed as the biannual code updates, it would supersede the interim ordinances. So I thought that was helpful to know for you. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for the clarification on that, the information. Appreciate it. Does anybody have any questions? Eldon?
I just have one. Can you go back to that one that had about flag lots? I did not understand that one. I forget which one it was. It might have been 8 or 9, maybe. No. That one, yeah. Could you, whoever spoke to that one, could they go through that one again to help me?
Sure. So this section of code deals with driveway spacing. And so there's spacing requirements for driveways, depending on what type of road you're accessing. So the intent was this to add this exemption if you had an existing flag lot, and let's just say you had a development come next to it. The spacing requirements for maybe a new driveway to this flag lot wouldn't necessarily apply because it's an existing driveway. Or if you had an existing driveway within a new development, because it's an existing flag lot, you're not going to be held to the same spacing standards because it is a flag lot. You can't really move that driveway anywhere. The spacing is stuck. So we just exempt it, meaning you won't have to go through a road mod process. It's just it's approvable as is. It's exempted from the code. On the contrary, if someone were to come in and create a development and then they wanted to create all these flag lots and then just say, oh, we're exempt from the spacing standard because these are flag lots. Well, that's what this is trying to clarify, is that it has to be an existing flag lot to be exempted from the spacing standards. You can't come in and create a flag lot and exempt yourself from the standards.
In other words, this is a grandfather clause.
Somewhat, yes.
Okay.
I think more often than not, it's used for what it's not intended to use, and that's why we want to stay existing. Not many people use this code exemption the right way.
A follow-up question on the clarification regarding technical road modifications. I think, Jennifer, you indicated that you met with Deeb, and I think what staff is trying to make sure is that the costs associated with these technical road modifications are fully captured. Is Deeb interpretation that this is an additional cost?
No, I think Deeb is, it understands that staff should be, or the county should be compensated for the time it takes to analyze these. I think more of their concern is what that we're pushing too many road modifications into a technical rather than a minor. And I think that that's what they want to step back and reevaluate with their work session to make sure that we're classifying the road mods appropriately, and that this just one change doesn't open up other issues.
Are they going to have that prepared prior to the Planning Commission meeting this month, or is that something they're doing in the future?
That's something they're doing in the future. Their recommendation was to strike this one and take it back and maybe do it in the next biannual session. I guess We just met with Deeb this afternoon, and that's when they kind of voiced their opinions on this. My thought on this is I don't think it, the change will do what it's intended to do and won't alter any kind of work session that they intend to do in the future. It's kind of a code that should be changed based on the feedback that we're getting through the design process and as the projects come in for review, the types of road modifications were being submitted, and that they're not minor as in the classification that the code says they are, because it does require a lot of staff time to process these road modifications. For instance, when they come in for an alternative pavement section on a public road, that could, if not evaluated correctly and just viewed as a minor road mod that's essentially administrative and a review engineer can just sign off on, it really needs to be reviewed by the road mod review team, our pavement preservation team, to make sure that the alternative pavement section is adequate. And it's not going to fail in a couple years, and then now the taxpayers are on the hook for repairing that section of road. So it's just, at this point, if that were to be proposed on a local access road, right now the code says a minor deviation. So I think the staff's rationale for the change is fee-based and being compensated correctly and applying the correct fees for the amount of time that staff spends with these road modifications. And Deeb's look is they want less and less road modifications to be classified as technical.
Is there a baseline or a threshold in terms of the number of hours that separates the difference between minor and technical?
Yes, just based on the fees, and it's about 2 to 3 hours for a minor, whereas the technicals are like 7 to 8. And then also, for instance, a large development, they may have 8 technical road modifications, but we only charge them 1 fee. So it might also need to look at, should we be charging for each technical road mod a project or a development comes in with? Or is it appropriate just to do 1 fee? Because obviously 7 or 8 hours for 8 technical road mods doesn't cover staff's time to review all of those. So I don't know if that probably didn't answer your question, and probably brought more. But then maybe Deeb has a point. We could step back and reevaluate, and it's not just the classification. It opens up another door of are the fees appropriate for the amount of time spent on these deviations? Because they're not simple matters. It's not always you know, evident why the request is, why the deviation is needed. And that's where the engineering analysis from both sides needs to come in. So, I guess the intent of this code section was just to, at least with the road, the recent road mods that we have been seeing, that they're appropriately classified, at least as a technical. If more and more need to be reclassified, then I think that that's what Deeb kind of wants to work on later.
Jennifer, you're fine. That was a good response. So it seems like there's a significant difference between the amount of hours for a minor versus a technical. You went from 2 to 3 hours up to 7 to 8 hours. So that's a significant jump. So I can understand that. Thanks, Jennifer.
I, along that same topic, just wanted to ask just a couple clarifying things. So if you could just kind of give me, when somebody comes in, they say, I've got a road modification, what tells you it's a minor or a whatever it is, the other one?
Yeah.
Major.
Or a
minor,
technical.
Major, whatever. Yeah. Technical. Yeah, technical. What determines that? That's one thing I don't quite understand.
So
our road modification.
Okay. Sorry, it's hard to hear myself talk. The code section for the road mods, and I can't spew out that code section, it's 4550, I think, does have guidelines of what qualifies for a minor road mod, a technical road mod, and then it also gives examples. But obviously, you can't encapsulate every single example of one. So it is kind of up to staff to first determine by what the examples we have, where it fits. And we're pretty good at that one, good at that. So let's say, for example, someone does not want to extend their road to the property line of a plat, which they're required to do, because there's some sort of topography issue and they just can't do it. Well, you've got to show us why you can't do it. You've got to put some engineering analysis and judgment and justifications as to why this road has to stop short of the plat. Because if it stops short, and we're not requiring that developer to construct that road, you're passing the buck onto the next development that has to complete that road and connect to that road. So that would be a technical. Whenever you're kind of like putting the onus onto another party, that would be a technical. I guess I can give you just, I mean, again, our code kind of goes over the guidelines of what qualifies as a minor and a technical.
That's okay. That's a really good explanation of it. And so when someone comes in and they bring that to you, it's a fee-based, basically, the reason why we want to change this is basically we want to make sure we're covering staff's time. You're saying it goes from 2 to 3 hours to 7 or 8 hours. Is Deeb's concerned, or do they, it seems like they might be concerned more of the how long it's going to take. Is that something that they brought up, or was it just a matter of the dollar amount?
They didn't specifically bring that up. They may have, I think they might have slightly alluded to it. But that's the thing. It doesn't change the amount of time, whether you give us the money or not. It's still going to have to be reviewed. If it's technical in nature, it's still going to have to be reviewed by the road modification review team.
And that makes sense. And yes. Regardless of what they pay, if you're doing it as a minor and it still takes you 7 to 8 hours, it doesn't take them any longer. You're just saying, right. Hey, it's a technical and the fee is now, I don't know what the difference is in the fees, but it is what it is. So, okay, I totally get and understand kind of that process and the reasoning behind it. Thank you.
So this is Eldon. I have one other question on that. Are there a lot of requests that come in that they state that it's just a minor instead of a technical? What is?
There's always a discussion of is something a minor, technical or a minor. It doesn't happen a lot, but more than it should, I think. The thing is, lots of developments come in, and let's just say they have 3 road modifications that they're requesting. Well, the second that one is technical, it doesn't really matter what the other ones are, because when that's taken to the road mod review team to review, the development as a whole is presented. And so you're kind of already, the road mod review team is already looking at the development. So the fact that you may have multiple ones and one's a technical and a couple other are minor, you're still looking at the development as a whole, and they've already paid the one fee for the technical. So that's the disconnect, is like they're coming in with multiple road mods that might be different classifications, but if you have a technical, you're already gonna be paying the fee anyway. Hopefully that didn't confuse you anymore.
All right. Thank you, Jennifer. All right. Is that all the questions? Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate that. All right. Members of the Planning Commission, do you have any comments? Any thoughts? Anybody? No? Okay. Well, with that, thank you, staff.
Can I just give you guys a quick update on upcoming meetings, just so kind of schedule-wise, if you don't mind? So November, you have, I believe it's 4 hearings, but 3 of them are code-related. So, one of it is a larger amendment to our wetland and habitat ordinance, and then some related shoreline, because of the code change, some of the shoreline code has to be changed. Thank you, Sonia. And then the flood hazard. So they're all kind of related, but code. And then there's a covenant amendment that you will hear. So that will be pretty, I would assume, not elaborate. So, and then typically, for those of you all have been around, December is usually we give you off. We're going to switch it this year. The December meetings are very early in the month, and instead of taking December off, take January off. And that helps a lot with some of the deadlines that staff has to do that will fall right in the holidays. And then you wouldn't have that first week of January work session. So instead, do the December meetings and take January off as of now, unless we've got something that's pressing. But wanted to kind of, you know, check in on that and see if everyone was okay with that idea. Okay. That's all.
I would like to give an update also, if I could, please, Matt.
Yes, ma'am.
That's better. Thank you. I'd like you to know that an appeal has been filed with the Growth Management Hearings Board of the county's approval of one of the annual review requests, and that was the Shalachi Bluff mine surface mining overlay. So that has been appealed. That appeal came in just a week and a half ago. So we're in the very early stages of that. And the petitioner to the Growth Board is the Friends of Clark County. And we will see where it goes from here.
Thanks, Chris.
Sure.
Sure.
Okay. With that, we'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.